Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to day 5 of our brand spanking new war on more brown people. Don't you just feel better already? Yeah, neither do I. But it is what it is. We got a bunch of stuff in the stack this evening. Yes, indeedy. And it being, I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of inclined to give the Rev a night off tonight. Because I don't feel like doing the shtick. I don't feel like doing the prayer meeting shtick. All day long, I've just sat and watched information fly past my eyes about the this disgusting little bit of mayhem and murder that we have taking place in Libya. And so we'll give the Rev the night off. Because it somehow seems inappropriate, at least to me. Sorry. Now, what's on tap for tonight? Well, among other things, we've got a guest popping by in about a half hour or so. Ron Pollock from Families USA will be joining us for a brief conversation. You know, after all, that this is the first anniversary of the passage of the Affordable Care Act. Yes, yes, yes. It's the first anniversary of the Affordable Care Act. And and oddly enough, none of the right-wing predictions of doom and disaster have come to pass. And it came to pass in those days. No, see, it didn't. But then again, why are we surprised? Right-wingers and repiglickins are... Oh, I'm looking for a word. Liars! Let's see, some of those doom and gloom scenarios that were put forward. It was the 20th of March, 2010. When Representative, then merely Representative, John Boehner said, passage of health reform is Armageddon. Obamacare will ruin our country. Why is it? What is it? Is it just me, or does John Boehner remind you of the late, great Foster Brooks? Remember Foster Brooks? I remember being a kid, and the Dean Martin roast would come along every, what was it, Friday night or so, Saturday night, I don't remember. And everybody waited for Foster Brooks to get up and do his drunk act. And the man was, of course, sober as a judge. But, you know, I was one of those. And there's just something about John Boehner that reminds me of Foster Brooks, except in a very, very unfunny way. Yeah, let's see. What is it that? Well, let's go back in time. Thanks to Mike Lux over at Crooks and Liars, we have the audio available to us of John Boehner's final speech on health care bill as he completely lost his cookies on air. Take it away, John.
Mr. Speaker and my colleagues, I rise tonight with a sad and heavy heart. Today we should be standing together, reflecting on a year of bipartisanship and working to answer our country's call and their challenge to address the rising cost of health insurance in our country. Today, this body, this institution, enshrined in the first article of the Constitution by our founding fathers as a sign of the importance they placed on this House, should be looking with pride on this legislation and our work. But it is not so.
How so?
No. Today we're standing here looking at a health care bill.
He's a drunk.
That no one in this body believes is satisfactory. Today we stand here amidst the wreckage of what was once the respect and honor that this House was held in by our fellow citizens. And we all know why it is so.
Well, why is
it? We have failed to listen to America.
Okay.
And we have failed to reflect the will of our constituents. And when we fail to reflect that will, we fail ourselves and we fail our country. Look at this bill.
Look at it.
Ask yourself.
Just look at it.
Do you really believe that if you like the health plan that you have, that you can keep it?
That's right. No, I
don't
know you can't. No, you can't.
And this economy. You can't say that. And this economy, with this unemployment, with our desperate needs for jobs and economic growth.
Where are the jobs, John?
Is this really the time to raise taxes, to create bureaucracies, and burden every job creator in our land? The answer is no. Can you go home and tell your senior citizens that these cuts in Medicare will not limit their access to doctors or further weaken the program instead of strengthening it? No, you cannot.
No.
Can you go home and tell your constituents with confidence that this bill respects the sanctity of all human life and that it won't allow for taxpayer funding of abortions for the first time in 30 years? No, you cannot.
No, you cannot.
And look at how this bill was written.
How is it written?
Did you say it was done openly? With transparency and accountability? Without backroom deals and struck behind closed doors, hidden from the people?
That was written by little baby Hitler.
Have you read the bill? Have you read the reconciliation bill?
Denver Pig Lincoln's even read.
Hell no, you haven't!
Hell no!
Order, Mr. Speaker.
Listen to the hooting wingnuts.
Both sides would do well to remember the dignity of the House.
Mr. Speaker, in a few minutes, we'll cast some of the most consequential votes that any of us will ever cast in this chamber. The decision we make will affect every man, woman, and child in this nation for generations to come. If we're going to vote to defy the will of the American people, then we ought to have the courage to stand before them and announce our votes one at a time.
Haven't seen any of that, have we? No one-at-a-time votes on Boner's watch. Hey, John, where are the jobs?
I sent a letter to the Speaker this week.
This is a letter?
Asking that the call of the roll be ordered for this vote.
The call of the roll.
And, Madam Speaker, I ask you.
Or the call of the wild,
will you,
either way.
In the interest of this institution, grant my request. Will you, Mr. Speaker, grant my request that we have a call of the roll? Mr. Speaker.
Rhetorical question or...
Will you grant my request that we have a call of the roll?
Under Clause 2A of Rule 20, a record vote is conducted by electronic device unless the Speaker directs otherwise.
And you, Mr. Speaker, will you grant that request?
The Chair will decide at the time the request is made. This is not it.
My colleagues, this is the People's House. When we came here, we each swore an oath to uphold and abide by the constitutions and representatives of the people. But the process here is broken. The institution is broken. And as a result, this bill is not what the American people need, nor what our constituents want. Americans are out there making sacrifices and struggling to build a better future for their kids. And over the last year, as the damn the torpedoes outline of this legislation became more clear, millions of Americans lifted their voices, and many for the first time, asking us to slow down, not to try to cram through more than this system could handle, not to spend money that we didn't have. In this time of recession, they want us to focus on jobs, not more spending.
Yeah, where are the jobs, John?
Not more government, and certainly not more taxes. But what they see today frightens them. They're frightened because they don't know what comes next. They're disgusted because what they see is one political party closing out another from what should be a national solution.
I think he's making that part up.
They're angry that no matter how they engage in this debate, this body moves forward against their will. Shame on us. Shame on this body. Shame on each and every one of you who substitutes your will and your desires above those of your fellow countrymen.
Well, I like that part. They clap some. Oh, there, I feel my lip quivering.
Around this chamber, looking upon us, are the lawgivers. From Moses to Goliath to Blackstone to Thomas Jefferson. By our actions today, we disgrace their values. We break the ties of history in this chamber, and we break our trust with America. When I handed the Speaker the gavel in 2007, I said this: this is the people's house, and the moment a majority forgets it, it starts writing itself to a ticket to minority status.
Has anybody printed yours yet, John?
If we pass this bill, there will be no turning back. It will be the last straw for the American people. And in a democracy, you can only ignore the will of the people for so long and get away with it. And if we defy the will of our fellow citizens and pass this bill, we're going to be held to account by those who have placed us in their trust. We will have shattered those bonds of trust. I beg you. I beg each and every one of you on both sides of the aisle, do not further strike at the heart of this country and this institution with arrogance, for surely you will not strike with impunity. I ask each of you to vow to never let this happen again. This process, this defiance of our citizens, it's not too late to begin to restore the bonds of trust with our nation, and return comedy to this institution.
Comedy.
And so join me. Join me in voting against this bill so that we can come together. Together anew, addressing the challenge of health care in a manner that brings credit to this body and brings credit to the ideals of this nation. And most importantly, that reflects the will of the American people. And I yield back.
If that guy was not at, it was not at least, oh, I don't know, the 4 to 6 fingers of good liquor into his bottle by the time he delivered that speech. I don't know. I don't know gin from Cabernet. But that's what. Do you remember? Do you remember a year ago, or is it almost like ancient history? Well, there we go. There we go. John Boehner and his hissy fit. Replete with dire predictions of doom and gloom. Well, what else did the wingnuts have to say? Well, there was former Senator Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum on the 23rd of October 2010 said, and you do, just Google the word Santorum, you'll know what it means. Said that the Affordable Care Act would destroy the country. Not harm the country, not weaken the country, destroy the country. He said that, again, October 23rd, 2010. Look around you. Still here, isn't it? But more importantly, Rick Sanctum Santorum, the man who plays with dead babies, no, really, said that the Affordable Care Act would cause the United States to have to, and this is a quote, dramatically cut the military because we can't pay for it. Now, call me crazy. Thank you. Is it just me, or have we been raining down bloody death on the nation of Libya since Saturday? Yeah, I thought we had. Cruise missile after cruise missile after cruise missile. A-10 Warthog anti-tank tank killer attacks. By the way, those are the planes that carry, if you are interested, those are the ones that most frequently use depleted uranium munitions. So that those nice, tidy, surgical strikes that you were hearing about, well, there's no overt confirmation of it yet, but I'd say the odds are pretty good that if A-10s are flying, that A-10s are flying carrying depleted uranium munitions. You know, the kind that vaporize upon impact and become aerosolized in the surrounding air and get breathed by people who aren't wearing Libyan military uniforms, who then get a little bit older if they're children and maybe start having flipper babies. Yeah, that depleted uranium. So much for no civilian casualties, huh? But yeah, we're raining miserable, godforsaken, bloody death on Libya. And oddly enough, I don't think the Peace Corps is the one doing it. No, it's the American military, which has not been, as Rick Sanctum Sanctorum said, dramatically cut. The military would appear to be just fine. More stories out of Libya later in the program. Then there's Senator Tom Coburn, Republican of Oklahoma, who was swept to office on a tide of moral outrage from the knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing voters of Oklahoma. Not all voters in Oklahoma are knuckle-walkers and mouth-breathers. Bart Kopp can attest to that. But it was certainly mouth-breathers and knuckle-walkers who elected him. Him being Tom Coburn, not Bart Kopp. I wish Bart Kopp was in the Senate. That would be worth something. Tom Coburn was swept into office in the United States Senate from the state of Oklahoma amidst the dire warnings that he issued that there was a rampant wave of lesbianism sweeping through the junior high schools of that state. No, really.
Doesn't that just slay you? I have to say that every time I mention Tom Coburn, just because Tom Coburn, well, you know. Tom Coburn said there will be no insurance industry left in 3 years. Well, the insurance industry better hurry up and get busy dying, because 1 year later, and it's still going gangbusters. It was the 19th of November 2009 when Glenn Beck told the assembled Beckerheads, "This is the end of prosperity in America forever. The end of America as you know it." We'll be right back with more End of America as You Know It right after this important commercial message from Goldline. Sean Hannity, the Hannity Job, the life support system for a hairdo, said, doing his best effort to sound like Edward R. Murrow standing among the buildings during the Blitz, "If we get nationalized health care, it's over. This is socialism. This is London. Boom, boom, boom. This is socialism." And then there's another alcoholic member of the House of Representatives, Senator Representative Paul Brown. That's B-R-O-U-N. On July the 10th, 2009, ordinary citizens having everyday access to reasonable health care, Representative Brown said, "It's exactly what's going on in Canada and Great Britain today, and a lot of people are going to die." And then there's Louis Terror Babies Gohmert of TX's, who said on July the 15th, 2009, "I would hate to think that among five women, one of them's going to die because we go to socialized care." Crazy, 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 crazy. And, of course, Representative Virginia 2X, double X Fox, Repiglicking from North Carolina. "The Republican plan will make sure we bring down the cost of health care for all Americans, and that ensures affordable access for all Americans, and is pro-life because it will not put seniors in a position of being put to death by their government." Put to death by their government. As a part of the process that I call doing this show, I try to pay attention to what's going on in America and the world. And I haven't seen any stories of Granny being dragged off to the gas chamber. Have you? Didn't think so. Plenty of stories of people like Jan Brewer sending Arizonans to their death. But that didn't have anything to do with the Affordable Care Act. That had to do with the hard-hearted, misanthropic, sick, twisted, semi-psychopathic policies that attend Repiglican dominance of government. And then there's Representative Michelle Bachmann. "On page 16, you can read for yourself that no new health insurance policies can be written once this federal plan comes into effect." Call me crazy, but I think there's been a lot of there's been lots of insurance policies written in the last year. And it's been in effect. Nevertheless, she also said, "Socialized medicine is the crown jewel of socialism. This will change our country forever." Well, it didn't seem to make us a country unwilling to bomb brown people, did it? No. No, it didn't. I have to tell you right now that there is some ugly, ugly, ugly weather blowing through. It's already knocked the phones out once. It is being accompanied by some rather serious hail. Hang on there, Roof. And it's entirely possible we may be knocked off the air. I hope we are not, but if we are, you will know where we went. We've already had one ugly power surge so far. My goal at this point in time is to get Ron Pollock on the air and have that conversation. So what we'll do is we'll take a little break. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. Jesus. Well, we got a tank tornado watch going, too. Can you hear this? Sounds like the beginning of the Doors, Riders on the Storm. That is what that is, isn't it? Riders, yeah, that's what I thought. Well, at any rate, we're going to take a little break, and I'm going to try to get hold of Ron Pollock, and we will have our conversation. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without cries. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my
this is getting interestinger and interestinger.
It's half past the hour of 6 o'clock here on the East Coast, and I have Ron Pollock on the line. But for the second time, I might add, no sooner had I gotten our connection established than, lo and behold, we took a big old lightning blast, and well, but I've got him on the line again, and we're going to cross our fingers and just hope that things work out, because this is a conversation, well, you know, this is an update that needs to be had. Because I've just shared with you all the doom and gloom that was pumped out into the information sphere in the past couple of years by the right wingers and their predictions of death and destruction and the end of the way of life as we know it, and how the Frisbees and the Wheat Checks would all go away. And just like the Republicans always do, it turns out that they are, oh, what's the word I'm looking for again? There it is, liars. So let's bring Ron on. Ron is the founding executive director from Families USA, a magnificent organization in Washington, D.C. They advocate on behalf of healthcare consumers, their mission being to achieve high-quality, affordable healthcare coverage for everyone in the U.S. So there's no one really better able to analyze the first year of the Affordable Care Act than Ron Pollock, and it's my pleasure to have him on the program. Ron, thank you for joining us this evening. Ron, are you there?
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ron. Sorry for the technical glitches, but somehow or another, I'm not in charge of the weather.
okay.
But as I told folks, Families USA is in a unique position to be able to talk about what's gone right and if anything has gone wrong with the Affordable Care Act over the last year, and sort of debunk the foolishness that has been put forward by the Republican Party. I will ask you, I suppose, as a starting place, when the Affordable Care Act was passed, were you satisfied with it in toto?
Well, you know, there's no major piece of legislation that ever passes that's going to be perfect. You know, a lot of people cherish the Social Security Act of 1935, the passage of Medicare in 1965. And if you look at what those laws said at that time when they were initially enacted, there were things that needed to be improved, and they were improved over time. And the same is with the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act provides a foundation that's a big leap in the right direction in terms of making high-quality, affordable health coverage and care available to people. It is not perfect, but it is a terrific piece of legislation, and it will serve as the foundation for many years to come for continued improvements in America's healthcare system.
Well, one of the things that I think concerned a lot of people as the Affordable Care Act was considered was the way in which it was implemented over an expanse of time. Can you talk a little bit, please, Ron, about what has come into play so far?
Sure. There are a lot of things that actually are effective now, and you're right in your underlying premise that most of the big provisions actually go into effect in a few years, but there are very significant improvements that have already been made. Among those improvements are as follows. For young adults, they can stay on their parents' policy until their 26th birthday. That's very significant because many of them are in entry-level jobs or are having a tough time finding a job, so they're uninsured. So now they can stay on their parents' policy. For seniors, they're terribly worried about this big gap in prescription drug coverage under Medicare, the so-called donut hole, and they have to spend every dollar of the care that they need out of their own pockets. Last year, people who fell into that gap of coverage received a check of $250. This year, they are going to receive a 50% discount on brand name drugs. That's a big deal. For children, if they have a pre-existing condition like asthma or diabetes, they no longer can be denied coverage by an insurance company due to that pre-existing condition. For small businesses, which are struggling to afford health care coverage for their workers, they are now eligible for a tax credit, and that tax credit can pay as much as 35% of the cost that they incur to cover their workers. A large amount of money was provided to community health centers. And as a result, the community health centers, which had assumed that they would serve 18 million people this year, will now be able to serve close to 29 million people this year. Early retirees, those between the ages of 55 and 64, it's not easy for their previous businesses to continue to provide coverage. They are now getting help so that early retirees can continue to have health care coverage. People who have been paying insurance, when they get sick, too often an insurance company has said, we're going to drop you from coverage, and so they rescinded their policy. That is no longer possible. A lot of people are worried that if they have a major illness, a catastrophic illness or a major accident, they're going to max out on their policy because benefits only provide up to certain dollars, and then they're totally on their own, and as a result, they're subject to bankruptcy. No longer can there be a lifetime cap on the benefits that an insurance company pays off. Insurance commissions in the 50 states have been given more money so that they can examine proposed premium rate increases proposed by insurance companies to determine if they're reasonable. And as a result, a number of proposed increases in insurance premiums have been deemed to appear unreasonable. They asked the insurance companies to go back to the drawing boards. And in a number of states, those insurance companies either rescinded their proposed increases or diminished how much they were going to ask people to pay more. So there are a lot of things that people can be very happy about that are in effect today.
Well, let me ask you this. Considering the ongoing cries of we're broke, we're bankrupt, and we can't afford this, and we can't afford Medicare anymore. You know, we see the proposals in places like Maine and Michigan and Ohio and Wisconsin. What is the status of the most vulnerable among us, Ron, the working poor, with regard to coverage under the ACA?
Well, most of the key relief will occur in a few years. And for people who are working and maybe middle class or maybe moderate income or poor, they're going to get very significant relief. What's going to happen is there will be new marketplaces established in each of the 50 states, and there will be a wide variety of choices that people can select from in terms of which insurance policy is most suitable for them. They'll have information like they've never had before because there's a new website created that it particularizes this by zip code so that you could find out what benefits are covered, what the premiums are, what out-of-pocket costs like deductibles and co-payments are. And for those people in the middle class or who are have more moderate incomes, they are going to be eligible for tax credit subsidies that will enable them to afford the premiums that they might otherwise not be able to afford. And one other thing they're going to get, not only will they get these tax credit subsidies that will help them pay the premiums, but there will be limitations on how much can be charged for out-of-pocket costs when people actually get care. And it's going to be provided on a sliding scale, so the lower the income, the less you'll have to pay. And so there are a lot of ways that this is going to strengthen the pocketbooks of working families.
Where then are we going forward, Ron, with regard to this Republican Congress? We all know that it is virulent, that it is not prone to the exercise of reason. Is the Affordable Care Act in jeopardy primarily from the House?
In a simple word, the answer is no. The House is going to keep on blowing smoke and passing bills in the House to try to either defund the Affordable Care Act or to repeal it, but it's not going to pass in the United States Senate. And in any event, President Obama wouldn't sign it into law. This is really a political effort on the part of Republicans. And you get your best cues from Senator Mitch McConnell who said in a speech to the Heritage Foundation, his number one, two, and three priorities was to make sure that President Obama is a one-term president. And so all of this is about trying to criticize a major accomplishment on the president's part in order to try to infect the elections in 2012. I don't think that's going to work. But in any event, answering your question, the legislation's not going to be repealed, and it's not going to be defunded.
You know, at the time of the passage of Social Security, which you mentioned, and Medicare, which you mentioned, the right wing, predictably, screamed the same sorts of dire warnings that they did with the ACA. In large part, they hollered communism and socialism. But yet we know now that, in large part at least, the vast majority of Americans don't want their Medicare touched and don't want their Social Security touched. Do you have any sense, Ron, for how long it will take for the Affordable Care Act to become meaningful enough to the American people to overcome this benighted moaning from the right wing?
Well, as we were saying before, there are a lot of provisions that go into effect in a few years. Now, there are a good number of people who have already received the early benefits, but most people have not yet directly received the benefits of the Affordable Care Act. When people can see it, feel it, touch it, smell it, I think people are going to see that it's going to have a very positive impact in their lives. And I've said, not with much tongue-in-cheek, assuming President Obama gets reelected in 2012, when he leaves office in the beginning of 2017, this term Obamacare is going to be a badge he's going to really like to have, because I think the American people will certainly understand how this affects their lives. They will see it provides real improvements. It strengthens quality of care. It makes care more affordable. But I think it's going to take some time, certainly as these larger provisions go into effect. I think that's when we're going to see the tide of public opinion change in such a way that there'll be strong support.
Is there anything that you see as, you mentioned that over time Social Security and Medicare were tweaked and improved. Is there anything that you would do, Ron, to or you would like to talk about in terms of beginning to advance expand what already exists?
Well, clearly there are improvements that can be made. The reality is those improvements are not going to be made in the next few years. Republicans in the House and Republicans in the Senate are not intending to strengthen this bill. They just want to criticize it, and they want to play politics with it. And so efforts to improve the legislation are not going to succeed, at least in this Congress. I think over time, once we pass the 2012 elections, and particularly when we have the legislation pretty much fully implemented, I think then we can start talking about bipartisanship to make improvements. And one of the things I think we're going to have to look at very carefully is whether the tax credit subsidies that people get are sufficiently adequate so that people feel they can afford coverage. And obviously, as experiments are started with efforts to contain costs, we have to see how they work. And those things that appear to work, we should try to implement on a nationwide basis.
I know that you have been actively involved, for instance, with an organization called Enroll America, that's focused on trying to get secure, optimal enrollment of uninsured people through effective implementation of the Affordable Care Act. What do you see in terms of participation and enrollment?
Well, that is, I think, a key challenge for all of us. And one of the things I'm so pleased about is that this effort of Enroll America, we've not actually launched the organization yet. We will do so very soon. But the groups that are involved in Enroll America are very diverse, and they have very different views about different aspects of the Affordable Care Act. You've got, in addition to many consumer groups, you've got the insurers, you've got the hospitals, you've got the pharmaceutical companies, you've got the community health centers. All of them are playing an active role and will be playing an active role in this process. And I think that augurs very well, because I think all of us have an interest in making sure that as many people have good coverage, that the uninsured get coverage, that those who are underinsured get better coverage. And Enroll America will be dedicated towards that purpose. And groups that may have some differences on other parts of the legislation, they will work harmoniously towards that end.
Well, you give me some hope, Ron, because you know so much of the media message is controlled by the right wing for reasons that don't bear going into, and so much of what most of America has heard has been gloom and doom, like I introduced folks to before I brought you on the air, and it's good to hear a sort of sober appraisal of exactly what is going on. I thank you very much for the time that you've taken to join us this evening, and I wish you the very best going forward. Anything that we can ever do to help get the message out, the Horn is more than happy to participate in. So thank you very kindly, and I would ask, is there anything that, just as a sort of a catch-all, is there anything that you wanted to get out that I didn't get around to touching?
Well, first let me thank you, because the kind of programs that you offer are really helpful, and they help to educate people and so they can sort out myth from fact, and that's extremely helpful. I would just say, if anyone wants more information, you can go to our website. We have lots of publications, and every one of them is for free. And our website is www.familiesusa.org, familiesusa.org. And feel free to download any of our publications. It will be no cost to you. And hopefully it will help you understand what's in this legislation so you can figure out how it will affect your lives.
Ron Pollack, thank you very much. I look forward to our next opportunity to get together in Washington, D.C.
Thanks for inviting me. Good to talk to you.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Ron Pollack, founding executive director of Families USA. Guy James introduced me to Ron, and in turn, I've been to a couple of their events in D.C. where they've provided stunning levels of information about the need for access to health care and what is involved with providing it. And they do a real valid service. I've been to the website, Families USA, FamiliesUSA.org. And I recommend that with any questions, especially on this first anniversary of the Affordable Care Act, that you go and have a read, because it's pretty dispassionate and it's pretty straightforward, and it's not freighted with a bunch of the ideological hooey. They are simply about trying to get as many people covered by the best quality health care that they can possibly have. So go and have a look. FamiliesUSA.org, FamiliesUSA.org. Your thoughts on this first anniversary are, of course, welcome. I think it's telling. They provided me with some numbers about what has happened with the Affordable Care Act, because and I'm going to share some of them with you simply because, well, you know, the for-profit media ain't gonna. These are telling. They are not giant numbers, but they are a meaningful beginning. In the state of Alabama, for instance, from before the ACA to the ACA a year in, young adults who are eligible to stay on their parents' insurance plans and are therefore not riding around out in the world utterly unprotected, in Alabama, that number is 62,100. Compare that with California, where the number is 504,600, more than a half a million. In Florida, it's a quarter of a million. In Georgia, it's 146,000. Now, as a parent who will someday hopefully have kids who actually go out into the working world, that's comforting to me. You know, someday maybe I'll have for-profit health care and I can share it with them. That would be beautiful. In Texas, which has the largest single percentage of uninsured people in the nation, well, 409,600 young people are able to stay on their parents' insurance now because of the Affordable Care Act. They couldn't otherwise. 191,100 in New York. Here in West Virginia, 17,900. A grand total of 3.4 million young people in the United States are able to be on their parents' insurance as a result of the ACA. And I guess that just doesn't matter to Republicans, does it? The Republican Party, young people, they think they're going to live forever. You know, so what if they get cancer when they're 23 years old because they live in a place like West Virginia that is rapidly approaching the status of being a statewide toxic waste dump? Who cares? But there are more aspects to the Affordable Care Act than that. In the United States, Medicare beneficiaries received a prescription drug rebate check in 2010. That number nationwide is 3.1 million to try to help with the donut hole. Medicare beneficiaries who have free access to preventative health services, preventative care being so very important. Wow, 45,918,500. And then there's children. Children with pre-existing conditions whom the for-profit insurance industry has proven. You know, this isn't an assertion. This is something proven by demonstrable fact. Insurance companies would tell to go die and would not cover and would destroy a family's little micro-economy. Well, that can't happen now. In the entire United States, there are 4,952,100 children with pre-existing conditions who are now protected. That's a valid reason for wanting to see this go forward, and eventually, when we get civilized government again, if any government we get can be referred to as civilized, this is, after all, empire. We've got a base of something to work with. Yes, I want single payer health care, universal single payer health care. I would at least like a public option. But this seems to provide at least some foundational basis going forward. Robert writes in from Australia, talking about there'll be no private insurance companies in 3 years. You know, that sort of doom and gloom business. He says, Bob, in Australia, there's been universal health care since 1975. Private health insurance companies are still going strong. There are no death panels, no communist takeover, and the world hasn't come to an end. Says Robert, it's all very dull. Yeah, it's all very dull except for the get to go to the doctor when you're sick part. We do have to be vigilant, however, because the several states have some degree of input and say-so over Medicare. Medicaid. My bad. Medicaid. And therein is where the trouble lies. Because having had their asses handed to them to one degree or another, with the Affordable Care Act, the Republicans doubled down going back to the states to try to see if maybe they couldn't destroy poor folks' access to health care. The Republicans are nothing if not relentless. So that's a starting place for tonight's program. Of course, this is conversation radio, which means naturally that we can talk about just about anything. So bring it to the table. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. A quick word about fundraising. I am proud to say that as of today, you know, we needed, with the beginning of the night last night, we needed 100 people. We needed 100 people to step up to the tune of $10 apiece. Well, thanks to the kind contributions of 3 people, we don't need that anymore. We only need 80 people to step up to the tune of $10 apiece. And we'll have March's fundraising taken care of. And there are real-world, you know, there are real-world bills that have to be paid in order to make this Cyber World radio program take place. And so we need 80 people, or some combination thereof, to contribute something on the order of $10 apiece. And then I'll hush up about fundraising until April the 1st. Wouldn't that be nice? Or maybe April the 2nd. Maybe April the 3rd. Who knows? I'd love to. Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to not be able to do this for a long, long time. Well, there went a power blink. That's not inspiring. I'll have to reboot the phone system. I got to crawl around under the desk and get that sorted out, too. But the other thing we're going to do is we will check in with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen and their Green News report from last night, which I did not run because, frankly, it didn't come in time for me to run it. We will do that as well. So we'll take a little break and come back. As I said many, many times over, this is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the Horn. Your calls. Line them up. I'm Bob.
Looking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, March 22nd, 2011.
Not out of the woods yet. The nuclear and humanitarian crisis continues in Japan. No nuke review for U.S. nuclear plants. Clean energy to the rescue. The surprising resilience of Japan's wind farms. Plus, surprise, a new 100-mile oil slick is spotted in the Gulf of Mexico.
Wow, another slow news week. All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And there's a growing body of evidence that radiation in excess of what the government's says are the minimum amount you should be exposed to are actually good for you.
Is that right, Ann Coulter? Hey, I've got an idea. Maybe you could head out to the Fukushima nuclear plant and lend a hand. It would be good for you and for us. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, as if there's not enough going on this week, we get word today as we go to air that a federal judge in California has temporarily put a hold on California's sweeping new global warming bill.
Yeah, he said that the state failed to adequately study the impacts of the proposed cap and trade system in the law. It was brought by environmental groups who say that it won't force big polluters to clean up their facilities. But we'll have more on that in our next report. The Obama administration has approved the first new deep water drilling permit since the BP oil disaster in the Gulf began almost a year ago. This is the first new drilling permit since more stringent safety rules were instituted by the Interior Department in the wake of that disaster. A handful of companies have resumed drilling on already existing leases in the Gulf of Mexico, but congressional Republicans say the new regulations are just too much.
Yes, it's been too much regulation that has led to all of our problems in this nation. Good Lord.
And this new drilling permit comes in the wake of reports over the weekend that the Coast Guard is investigating a new oil slick that was spotted in the Gulf of Mexico just 20 miles from the site of the BP oil disaster. New oil has washed up in outlying marshes in Louisiana. Coast Guard officials are still investigating the source of that 100-mile slick. And now on to Japan, where the toll of the dead and missing from the twin disasters on March 11th is now over 21,000. Officials say many people were apparently swept out to sea and may never be accounted for. We're not out of the woods yet on the nuclear crisis. Work on stabilizing the reactor units at the stricken Fukushima nuclear power plant continue in the ongoing crisis, with the crucial water pumps that cool the reactor units are now requiring repairs, a process that could take 2 or 3 days. Spraying of the reactor units with water cannons to keep the units cool has resumed. Now, once a reliable system of cooling is established, nuclear experts in the U.S. estimate it will take at least a week to stabilize those reactors.
As of airtime today, electricity has been restored to all 6 of those nuclear reactors from the grid. It's not necessarily doing a lot of good, however, until those pumping systems are fixed, after they've been battered by the earthquake, the tsunami, and the ensuing explosions in many of those reactors.
So the world remains on edge as we keep our eyes on Fukushima and the radiation levels. We now have reports of radiation being found in raw milk, in leafy vegetables, and just as of last night, radiation in seawater around the plant, which could further hurt Japan's fishing industry, which already took a beating in the March 11th tsunami.
And we also want to stress that nuclear and health experts continue to insist that there is no risk of dangerous radiation reaching the United States. Reports in Japanese media indicate that Tokyo Electric Power Company, also known as TEPCO, the operator and owner of the Fukushima plant, may have worsened the situation by delaying taking drastic actions at the stricken plant in order to save it and protect its enormous investment. Recent very serious scandals revealing falsified inspection reports, cover-ups, and maintenance lapses at its nuclear facilities have earned TEPCO a bad reputation. The accident in Japan has understandably increased scrutiny of the 104 nuclear power plants in the United States. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission announced two new reviews of the U.S. fleet of nuclear plants, an immediate 90-day review providing a quick snapshot of the condition of our nuclear plants, and it will be conducted simultaneously with a second longer-term safety and regulatory review. But a recent report from the Union of Concerned Scientists slams the NRC, documenting 14 near misses at U.S. nuclear facilities in just the past 2 years. Finally, Japan's wind farms came through the earthquake with no damage and have stepped up electricity generation after the automatic shutdown of all of the nation's reactors.
You mean there have been no threats of massive wind poisoning across the country?
Nope, nor any solar spills either.
Go figure. For more on that and the rest of today's green news that we couldn't get to today, please stop by our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you to continue telling the truth over your public airwaves. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Well, I'm not uptight, not unattractive. Turn me on tonight. I'm radioactive. Radioactive.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends!
And hippies!
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And other bath and body stuff!
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
We begin the second hour of the program. Marty out in California heard the rain beating on the roof and the windows. Ferg is just, you know, this is the kind of happy news I just love. During the break, Ferg came in and said, Dad. And anytime Ferg uses the Dad voice, that means that whatever comes after is not going to be good. Dad, the storm just blew through, and we're missing a bunch of shingles now. Of course we are.
course we are.
Well, it's at least nominally still a roof, so here. Knock wood. But Marty heard the rain falling and said, is your weather carrying a sign that says, hi from California? Yeah, because apparently there's been some ugly out there. I don't know. I got up this morning and I just saw this big red blob over West Virginia. It looked sort of like a, no, I don't know, like an adolescent's face. And I had a feeling today was going to get interesting. Oddly enough, it was pretty warm all day. And then right at showtime, because that's when the weather is scheduled around here, the weather is Bob-centric and consequently happens at showtime. But right now we got folks on the line. You know the number, by the way, 877-443-2366 or on your nickel 304-658-3333. And let's go to the phones and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Still dry, thankfully.
I hope that situation continues. Listen, I want to thank you for having that gentleman on the telephone tonight. I think he explained a lot of points and perhaps dissipated a number of fears about the ACA.
I hope so. Ron Pollock probably knows more about it, the Affordable Care Act, than just about anybody in this country, a bunch of legislators included.
Well, you know, when I hear what I heard earlier about, well, it was an excerpt from Boehner's rant, it just reminded me of the email I sent you. Andy Warhol once said, everyone will have 50 minutes of fame. With the Republicans, it's 15 minutes of shame.
And, you know, Jim, I think he's a drunk. I don't think he knows half of what he's saying.
Listen, I've done enough drinking in my life to know when someone's sober and when they're not, and I think you're right.
I mean, those little sort of passing slurs.
Well, obviously he's under some type of influence. And whatever influence it is, whether he's drunk or sober, it's not good.
And, you know, far be it from me to criticize anybody for taking a drink. But you know what? I'd like to think that if I were in the House of Representatives, I could manage to stay sober long enough to go make a speech. I'm proud of the fact that I managed to stay sober to do three hours of radio every night.
I understand. I do understand.
Because, you know, the nature of this job is such that sometimes it's a real freaking challenge.
Well, the news that you bring isn't good, but it needs to be heard, and people need to know what's going on. Because we certainly don't get it from a lot of other places. That is for damn sure.
Well, I did want you to know that I appreciated you dropping me a note earlier today. It was early this morning when I saw the news, or what for me is early in the morning, the news that Elizabeth Taylor had died. And I know that she was one of those Hollywood icons that certainly meant a lot to you. So thanks for the heads up.
May I share that with the audience?
Absolutely.
Bob, a very sad day with the passing of Elizabeth Taylor. A kind, caring, and beautiful light was dimmed but not extinguished, for it will always, always shine in the heart of so many others who watched her beauty and talent and grace on the screen. Her compassion and actions for persons with AIDS and with AMFAR is legendary and historic. And to end this email, and I quote, and when she dies, let us cut her out in little stars and make the face of heaven so fine that all the world will be in love with night and pay no homage to the garish sun.
I've always been touched by that line. It's beautiful. And lest it be forgot, you know, Elizabeth Taylor did have a long and distinguished Hollywood career. Lord knows she was hounded by the gossip press. But in the midst of it all, she did find a way to do profound good with her life. And I think that that's, you know, more so than any film or any tawdry tales of her tempestuous relationship with Richard Burton. It is what she did with AMFAR and with her. Because she got into the struggle against AIDS early, as you well know, Jim.
Back in 1985, she began AMFAR. And I've always contributed to that organization ever since its founding. And if anyone would have been concerned with public health care and the care for the sick and the dying, when no one else at that time gave a damn, it was she. And she wasn't afraid to do it. And, you know, in spite of the publicity that surrounded her personal life, which is her personal life. I have no problem with her personal life whatsoever. I just remember her as a kind, loving, and caring person, as I said before, who was brought into the theater at a very early age. And God only knows what that did to her. But throughout her life was stricken with all types of horrible diseases. And spent the last portion of her life in a wheelchair. I mean, everything from brain tumors to pneumonia, which stopped Cleopatra when it was being filmed, to heart trouble, everything. She was a very kind person, and she didn't judge anybody. And she wasn't afraid to get out there and say, look, you know, we are all human beings, and we all inhabit the same planet, and we all realize that we are mortal. And for God's sakes, let's stop this judgment of people because of the way they try to live their lives and because of the mistakes they make. And most importantly, to recognize the efforts they have made to correct them or at least to temporize or assuage them from the public.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, but wasn't one of those turning points for her and one of the motivations for her entry into the struggle against the scourge that, well, and you know, it was a human-made scourge insofar as it was brought on by ignorance of people, by, you know, Ronald Reagan and the like, the horrible demise of Rock Hudson.
Absolutely. They were good friends. And, you know, she realized exactly what this could do. And when people weren't paying attention to this thing that was first called GRID and didn't even have a name, and they finally came up with the acronym AIDS. And then they began to realize, you know, how dangerous it really was, and it just didn't afflict blacks, drug users, and the lower elements of society for whom no one cared, not even the most so-called compassionate religious figures in this country. It was she, this beautiful, brilliant, talented woman, who brought so much joy and pathos, but, and most importantly, so much talent. I mean, when you go through the litany of films that she was our participant, everything from National Velvet all the way through Reflections of the Golden Eye to Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf to The Taming of the Shrew, I mean, this lady had such talent and such presence, as far as I'm concerned. Compared to her, there are no more real stars in Hollywood. There really aren't. I mean, this is a watershed day. And I will say this. There is a new star in heaven tonight.
Well, thank you, Jim. Thank you for that kind and gentle tribute. I do appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
You have a good night.
You too.
Bye now. Our good friend Jim, and while you know, well, I don't think Jim cares much for it, and I don't care much for it, and you don't care much for it, you know, the whole celebrity gossip BS. Marking Elizabeth Taylor's passing and noting her passing is worth a few minutes. Because of the fact that she triumphed over an entertainment culture that would have rendered her merely a subject of gossip, and instead made herself a force for good in the world. And so we note with sadness her passing. And also note that, as Jim noted, she had had horrible illnesses, and her pain is over. Onward we go. You know the number. Dial it up if you want to. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Yeah, you know, I have to concur with Jim about Elizabeth Taylor. I mean, I'm not, most of these stars, it's like, yeah, whatever. But I have to say, you know, I was a big fan before she got involved, and, you know, I really had a lot of respect for her when she spoke out, you know, in the 80s, because it just was not done, and people had to take a step because it was her, because she had a lot of pull, and, you know, she really did rally behind, you know, the early victims of AIDS, you know, and it's quite,
well, you know, exactly,
quite remarkable at the time, too. I thought, wow, okay.
And if you think about that acronym, AIDS, the very fact that it was considered acquired immune deficiency syndrome, you know, acquired is what you do when you go down to the grocery store and you buy a can of beans. There's an element in that term that there's some sort of that one somehow deserves it. You know what I mean?
It brings up the whole Ryan White. That, I mean, can you believe how this people can be so despicable? And that's another very memorable horror show in America, when they actually was tormenting this poor child because he wanted to go to school. I mean, I just, you know what I mean? And so I thought about that when I heard the news about her, too, you know? And he just flashed back to the 80s. Was so upsetting because of how horrifying the epidemic was, and the complete lack of interest from the government in this. You know, I mean, you had just, it was just, people were just stricken in San Francisco. Yeah, it was bad.
You know, it's very interesting, Sandra, because the emails are rolling in, Darlene and David in Tennessee, both noting that, you know, she was, you know, that she strode largely upon the world. Among other things, it's worth remembering, as David points out, that she made humongous contributions to the film Giant, if you recall. Because of her status, she fought for and won a struggle to keep keep out the racism, she won out to keep the struggles against racism included in the film. So that Hollywood didn't get to do what Hollywood likes to do, and that is gloss over the ugly parts and just make something that'll be big box office.
Oh yeah, no. Well, she never. I mean, please. Some of her roles were just like, oh wow, you know, that Suddenly Last Summer. If that wasn't the most, one of the most disturbing films.
Well,
come on, that was out of control.
I don't watch Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf by myself.
Oh yeah, that's another one that was just like, good Jesus. You know, she, she's shy. And the thing about her, she was such a wonderful actress, too. You know what I mean? She was a great actor, Elizabeth Taylor. I was, her evolution was astounding. She was really good, too. And, you know, besides being sort of, you know, kind of amazingly stunning, I don't even know.
Yeah, God Almighty, those eyes. Those eyes.
You look at it, you're like, it's almost surreal how attractive she was. But, you know, I know she had really horrible diseases. I was amazed that she lived this long. I mean, she was 79, you know?
Yeah.
But and in fact, held herself, you know, I don't know, so much dignity. I know it sounds, I just really is sort of kind of an amazing persona and person out of Hollywood, really. I mean, you just really don't have them anymore. If I should say so.
And, Darlene echoing that as well, that with her passes the very last of an era of sort of Hollywood nobility.
Yeah, no, it's over. I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's not even anybody remotely that I can even give a hell. You know what I mean nowadays? Like, please. You know, really. It's just sort of...
Angelina?
You can't even put it in the same conversation. It's just not even interesting in the same way as that generation was. I also, which is one of her co-stars, Paul Newman, you know, that Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, that was like one of my favorite movies, because once again, these people look so damn good. I was like, hello?
You remind me of something that I need to load onto my Kindle, since I'm now a convert and everything.
Mm.
There was a book out, oh, I guess maybe it was a year or so ago, that it's been on the market. And it's a biography of the three, and, you know, they're kind of defined as the three great hell-raising drunks mid 20th century film, and it's Peter O'Toole, Richard Burton, and the guy whose name I can never remember, who played the owner of the trainer of the gladiators in the gladiator film. In fact, he died in the middle of the film. And I need to, because that's another one of those gone eras.
Was it Lee J. Cobb?
No. Somebody will help me in a minute.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Well, Peter O'Toole, I mean, he's still hanging on, too. And that was another one who was, you know, just sort of just a really stunning man when he was young. You know what I mean? Like, hello?
Well, to this day, one of my favorite Oliver Reed.
Oliver Reed, yes, he was a fantastic actor. Yes.
Or maybe it was Oliver Reed, Richard Harris.
Well, Richard Harris, yeah, he was another one.
There's a book out there, and you've reminded me that I must own it. One of my favorite scenes in all of film is that one in Lawrence of Arabia, where, and it's just, you know, David Lean just shoots it kind of, you know, it's not a medium shot, but it's not a close-up. And Peter O'Toole is sitting there as Lawrence lighting a match, and he just draws his finger up the match to put out the flame. And no noise, no face made, no mugging, nothing like that. And so the scene continues a little bit later, I just loved it. A little bit later, one of his mates does the same thing. And when he gets to the tip of the flame and gets burned, he goes, "Ow! That bloody well hurts!" And Peter O'Toole says, "Yes, it does, doesn't it?" And he says, "Well, what's the trick then?" And Peter O'Toole just looks at him and says, "The trick is not minding that it hurts." And if you watch that scene and you don't just kind of step back a little bit, something wrong.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, that cadre of actors were, you know, that, yeah, same with another one of my, if you're talking about, you know, actors, was James Mason. I was a huge fan.
Oh, James Mason, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that, no.
You know, because he played that man, I forget, in Nabokov, Lolita. I mean, that role was like...
Oh, Claire Quilty?
The hell? No, Peter Sellers.
Yeah, that was, right, no, no, he played
professor.
Humbert, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, but, yeah, I mean, back to Elizabeth Taylor, I don't know, you know, I mean, she seems to be getting the proper tribute, which is good, you know.
You know what? I would far rather see her have 3 days of for-profit media funeral coverage than, say, the 3 days that Ronald Reagan was given.
Or that Tim, whatever his name was, they had that, like, state funeral for that reporter guy?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Russert? Oh, yeah.
Russert. Anyway, I just wanted to, you know, I appreciated that.
It's Entertainment Tonight on the Horn, yeah.
I just thought that, you know, it's appropriate because that she was sort of, you know, larger than life, if I could even national treasure, all that stuff. That's
oh,
true about
yeah,
her,
because we know. Could sit here and just movie after Maggie, you know, Maggie the Cat.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, I mean, you know, she, yeah, and these are sort of fantastic co-stars, you know, like... who was that freak who had the car accident? Monty Cliff. You know, he's another wonderful actor.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and, yeah, she was just, wonderful. All her sort of personal drama, various men that she snatched from folks. You know, what can you say? Anyway. Hey, listen, so I really am quite disturbed, but I'm not surprised, but I'm scared about what Israel's going to do.
Oh, you know, I was...
You know, because I was like, I was like, damn, they finally got up on a train. You know, it was like, it's not surprising because it's just, but it's horrible. Don't get me wrong, I'm like, oh, no. But what's more horrifying on top of this is what they're going to do.
But the thing is, there's unreported stuff.
What else have you heard? Because I really am.
Well, no, I mean, it's so. You know, it's been bus attack, bus attack, bus attack, bus attack all day long.
But it all started out with, you know, families being slaughtered and people being bombed indiscriminately in Gaza, and then rockets being lobbed. I don't really know where this latest.
Well, right, and well, yeah. So there was a blog post I got today from the Babylon and Beyond section of the L.A. Times.
Oh yeah.
Observations from Iraq, Iran, Israel, the Arab world, and beyond. Headline, West Bank, Palestinians asked for international protection, citing rise in attacks by Israeli settlers. So this latest one, three Israelis from Havat Ma'on settlement stabbed and seriously injured 33-year-old Mahmoud Ibrahim Awad of Kerbat Touba, a tiny village south of the West Bank city of Hebron. What was Muhammad Ibrahim Awad's crime? He was walking home Monday morning. They stabbed him in the head, the chest, and the arm.
Well, when did that Israeli family get killed? That was a couple of weeks ago, right?
Right.
You know, because it's just sort of, I mean, all of a sudden it's just escalated. But, I mean, are they going to now, you know, do a carpet bombing on Gaza again?
God only knows, that's the thing. Like you say, you know, I'm scared.
Yeah, no, I am scared because I looked at the Jerusalem Post just to have a look because that's a really scary paper, and Netanyahu's face is like, you know, we will respond, and he was like, you know, the IDF will, you know, just straight up. I thought his head was going to explode, right?
Right, and lo and behold, who's over there visiting?
I was gonna say, you know, that I can't even talk about, and it's so ridiculous.
Yeah, well, see, I'm in the same place. I'm just
it's just too much, you know. But it is horrifying because in Libya, I guess I can't pronounce the name of the city. It starts with an M. But, I mean, he's about to do a slaughter on some city on the coast that they're really worried about. And, you know, the air, whatever they have going on, can't really prevent it. You see what I'm saying? So I know Obama's trying to hand it over or whatever he's doing, but hand it over to who?
To do what? Because the thing that kind of throws me in all of this is, and this kind of has to be noted, it reminds me, and bear in mind that this sticks in, that this is like a bone in my throat to even mention, but there's some of this that reminds me of George W. Bush's coalition of the billing. You know, because remember when Monaco sent monkeys? Really, bomb-sniffing monkeys?
Oh, okay, yeah.
As part of the coalition of the billing?
I missed that, but yikes, okay.
Yeah. Well, this is a little bit of that because, what is it, France dropped one bomb and hasn't done another damn thing.
Well, I thought France has owned one plane.
Oh, don't help.
No, and it's kind of like, hello? You know, what's going on?
We've launched 162 cruise missiles or something like that. Britain has launched 12.
No, and so it's really disingenuous to look at the Americans from Obama on down talking about, you know, how they want to wind this down. And then you hear about the Libyans marching to, you know, massacre some beach town. And it's just, and then some fool was on TV with a gun, a newsreader. On Libya's with a gun. This is our gun and blood. And this was a newsreader. So I don't know what, you know, what Obama and his friends have gotten us involved in. I'm telling you, Bob. It's
this thing is a really, really nasty onion because it's got layers after layers. Thanks to Sailor Chick in the chat room. I got to do a little bit of homework early in the morning. Guess what happened in 2009? This is real fun.
Oh, is this about Libya? What?
Yeah, about Libya. It was back in 2009 that Libya was contemplating plans, and you know it's hard not to pay attention to stuff like this. It's from 25 January 2009 from Energypedia News. Headline: Libya. Gaddafi considering nationalizing foreign oil companies. Now, who has the power to arm up all those rebels? Just asking.
Yeah.
You know, who can get Blackwater or Z or Zoo or whatever the hell they call themselves these days to avoid liability on the line yesterday? ExxonMobil? Royal Dutch Shell? BP, maybe? And, you know, I know this makes me sound... God, if I start sounding like Alex Jones or anything, somebody just call and I'll end the show.
Well, maybe you'll get to be on The View.
Hoo-wee! Yeah. Oh, well, I got to get the Charlie Sheen phone call first.
Oh, God. Anyway.
Yeah, but no, it was hard. It was hard to, it was kind of hard to avoid that little story. And then the business, you know, the Pentagon stories never quite pan out the way they're played. All we heard after we dumped an F-15E Strike Eagle at God knows how many millions and billions of dollars in the some city in the desert, was that the American operators of the plane have been successfully rescued. Well, now there's some detail coming out, Sandra, and it's really not fun. Did you happen to see this?
Are you talking about them poor people who were shot?
Yeah.
Yeah, what else has gone on? I mean, it was bad enough what I heard. What have you heard?
Well, no, it's just, you know, the one guy gets extracted. He gets picked up by rebel forces and turned over, and everything's happy. But the other guy gets left behind out in the desert somewhere near some little community. And he, you know, he calls for the rescue, and the Marine Osprey comes by. And we'll just go to the news coverage for this. With a stricken U.S. pilot lost alone and terrified in the dark, Gaddafi hating villagers rushed to his aid and to thank him for taking on the tyrant. But as they approached, American special forces unleashed a terrifying volley of gunfire, scattering them in all directions, fearing for their lives. Several villagers were injured in the melee, including a man who was said to have lost a leg. And the man may actually have been a child, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so do not approach the Americans, do not thank the Americans, do not greet the Americans, because the Americans will shoot your ass.
Yeah, no, I just flashed to the WikiLeaks, you know, video. You see what I mean? It don't matter, you're best to take the other direction. Yeah, that was a really awful story. What's that Libya thing?
And the other thing was pointed out to me was that yes, we are using A-10 Warthog, tank killer aircraft.
Well, listen, why are we using depleted uranium in this situation?
Well, we don't know for certain that we are, but if you're taking out tanks, the weapon of choice of the United States military is a depleted uranium round.
Well, no, but it's just incredible. So like you said, there has to be, you know, there's underpinnings of you know, giant corporations' interests being at risk. So we slap a humanitarian label on it and off we go. But I don't know what the end game is here. Do they know in Washington?
The Republican Party is happier than a pig in poop because they get to criticize Barack Obama for being a warmonger. And legitimate issues are being raised about, or what I perceive to be legitimate issues being raised about the fact that he didn't even bother to consult with Congress.
Yeah, no, but that's like, I mean, to me, that is so stupid on his part, too, but it's also really frightening. It's like, yeah, we already talked about this, just sort of, it's so blatant. So now the Congress is making, I heard they were making noises, and they're always making noises after the fact. It's so boring.
But, you know, what they're talking about is, you know, maybe they could have given him an authorization for the use of force. I'm tired of those, Sandra. I don't know about you, but I'm tired of them. Because the Constitution does not contain a provision, and I'm one of those constitutional geeks, and yes, I know there's a law from 19 God knows whatever that says we can circumvent the Constitution, but I still believe in the Supremacy Clause. And if the Constitution is clear that if the United States wants to make war on somebody, we need to declare war on them.
Yeah, well, no, but the Congress has frittered away its authority willingly because it's so much easier for that body to put on the presidency whatever it wants because they don't want to face the voters with it. You know what I'm saying? It's a problem for the Congress, too. They've given away. And they don't seem to be bothered by it because they don't want to answer for it. They'd rather let the executive do that.
Well, and again,
so
that's like what, right, it's like what we mentioned last night. It's the fact that Robert Byrd was out there with the Iraq War saying that Congress has abdicated its constitutionally granted authority.
Yeah, when I bring up the War Powers Act, I'm like, oh, that's unconstitutional too, because the Congress is not supposed to give him any sort of notice or 60-day, 90-day.
The Constitution is clear.
No, it's incredibly clear on that.
And frankly, as a matter of constitutional principle and prerogative, the Congress cannot pass a law. And again, this is another one of those supremacy issues, supremacy clause issues. The Congress cannot pass a law that says that the Congress is giving up power that the Constitution gave it. Does that make sense? The only way Congress can get rid of a power that the Constitution gives to it is to pass a constitutional amendment negating the portion of the Constitution that delineates that power. And I mean, I'm just a little bit lost with it.
Well, and so, but the thing is, you know, year after year, you know, we are just letting these sort of constitutional destroying activities lay. They just stay. And it's an accumulative effect, like I said, with the presidency. So we end up having a monarchy. Presidential monarchy. I know that sounds weird, but
I would use the term an imperial presidency.
Okay, yeah, it's just kind of, and you know, the people are going along with this, you know, because the relationship between the American population and the presidency has always been a bit special. So,
well, let me ask you this, because I've kind of been called on the carpet for it. I oppose this action in Libya because I am foursquare 100% rock-ribbed committed to principles of nonviolence. And I've had some pushback on that. How do you explain, Sandra, opposing this in light of the fact that it is sort of cast in this humanitarian light?
Well, that's right. It's just such a, you know, it's just, the whole thing just sort of, it stinks to high heaven to me, A, because of our national position, which what we were just talking about, the unconstitutionality, but also the international norms that it's establishing is real stinky too. Because this P2P, this protection of people document or doctrine that they're trying to, no. It just doesn't fly. The Security Council has needed to be reformed, oh my God, forever, you know, with its sort of permanent voters and non-voting and, you know, and rotating members. All of it on the security end of the UN is real dodgy. This is just not cool. I mean, why didn't they refer him to the International Criminal Court? You know, why didn't they take other steps first? You see what I'm saying? I don't know. I just think that the whole thing is very dicey. Most importantly, because I don't see the end game. I don't understand what their plan is.
I'm real, real careful with this thing, Sandra, because I don't want to be perceived as in agreement with Pat Buchanan or Joe Scarborough or any of those freaks, because I'm not. But having said that, there's just something about the whole situation that, as you said, stinks. I can't make it work out in my head, because on the one hand, we want to stop the humanitarian crisis, and we want to eliminate Gaddafi's ability to kill his own people because he's a brutal dictator, and we've heard that song before.
Well.
But how do you stop Gaddafi short of taking Gaddafi out?
Well, no, exactly. And like I said before, there's a pending massacre coming up, you know, on a coastal town. I guess that's going to go ahead. And also, what the hell was that they did in Gaza? You see what I'm saying? It's too ridiculous.
You know, I caught a clip from Jon Stewart last night where they were talking about the American program, and he and John Oliver presented the whole bit as one of those infomercials where they're selling like OxyClean or whatever. And at the end, and I was quite surprised in light of the fact that it's Jon Stewart, it's a for-profit media network, it's owned by Comedy Central's owned by Viacom, all of that. And at the end, a little disclaimer, you know, just like a pharmaceutical ad, you know, if you experience an insurrection lasting more than 4 days, call a diplomat. And the very last thing, that it said was, does not apply in Gaza and the West Bank.
Well, that's okay. Well, listen, kudos to that. Actually, my goodness.
I was frankly surprised.
And also, I guess it don't apply to Bahrain and Yemen because, you know, they're opening fire wholesale on peaceful people in the streets. And so the Libya thing, like I said, I read an article where they were talking about the decision-making. You know, they love to do that, the decision-making process at the White House, and how they were basically saying that it all fell on the shoulders of President Not Sure, and he decided we must reassert our values in the Middle East.
But that's messaging based upon the previous, and again, this is where they get themselves in trouble, Sandra, because they're engaged in responsive messaging. They are not in control of the message. And in this case, the right wing crafted and concocted this frame whereby poor little sissy Barack was shoved around by the mean women.
I heard that he decided, no, this is what we're going to do. This is what we always hear at the end of the day with Obama, is that he ain't being pushed nowhere. I don't know. That's just my opinion.
Well, sure. If you're the President of the United States, you might tend to think, well, that whole Harry Truman thing, that the buck stops here. But I don't know. Well, did you catch our buddy Maureen Dowd today?
I haven't had a chance to read her. God, I mean, what was she talking about?
Oh, you're so gonna just, the column was titled Fight of the Valkyries.
Oh, no, she's still on that meme?
She done it. They are called the Amazon Warriors, the Lady Hawks, the Valkyries, the Durgas. There is something positively mythological about a group of strong women swooping down to shake the president out of his delicate sensibilities and show him the way to war. And there is something positively predictable about guys in the White House pushing back against that storyline for fear it makes the president look henpecked.
Well, see, but that's the thing, though. I'm not really... No, we know about Susan Rice and Susan. We know about the Susans. We know what they're about. But that isn't, I heard, you know, my reading of it is that, you know, he decided that, well, this would be a good opportunity for us to be relevant again. And there's nothing sissified about that. It's just some indecisive BS on his part. But I don't, you know, I'm not buying it. I guess try to emasculate him at all times? Is that what that's about?
Well, she was, she brings up the fact that, of course, and, you know, thank you, Maureen, for giving Rush Limbaugh more press. The fact that, again, this sissified Obama is a trope that has been hatched inside the filthiest bowels of right-wing think tanks. And it bore its nastiest fruit out of Flush Flimball, you know, that godforsaken junkie. On his program, he said, of course the males were opposed. It's the new castrati. They're sissies.
Oh, no, that also, speaks to their fear of a black president, too, if I may add. I'm not.
Oh, absolutely.
None of that.
Absolutely.
None of that. That's a load of crap. On her part, she's, you know, and I hate to say it because I'm a woman, but she got some issues with men along with her misogyny. I don't know what to say about her. She's out of control, in trouble. Maureen Dow, I used to find her amusing.
I mean, you know, she can't go 100 words without busting out all Hillary. In discussing Hillary, she says she may also have had some pillow talk with Bill, whose regrets about Rwanda no doubt helped shape his recommendation for a no-fly zone over Libya.
Okay, so it's just sort of, you know, which is it? The angry black man, weak Negro, yes a Boston, Amos and Andy. I mean, which one is it today?
Yeah, because they cannot seem to come to terms with Barack Obama simply as a human being.
And simply as a president saying, oh shit, let me just go bomb something. I can. Remember when Clinton asked, why'd you mess with Monica? And he said, well, I could. Okay.
Yeah, there you
Obama can too.
Right.
I mean, I don't understand.
Well, again, it's like that line that I saw a couple of days ago, that the right wing is convinced that Barack Obama is only 3/5 of a president.
You know what? That is messed up. That's a T-shirt worthy one. But see, the problem that I'm having with all this week is I'm remembering that this president called President Zuma in South Africa telling him to keep Aristide there. I'm like, damn, Obama. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that sounds like empire and some bullshit. And to Zuma's credit, he said, you know what? No, F you. He can leave. But this is Obama doing what American presidents have done. So I'm sick of the he's this, that, or another with the weak stuff on the foreign policy stage. No way. He's acting just like modern presidents do. Don't give me that. I think his decision to bomb Libya was a bad one because it's not going to end well. But I don't see, you know.
Well, it's not going to end well because they have no idea how it's going to end.
But then Clinton and all of other people did the same thing. I mean, trust me, bombing Serbia wasn't a good time.
No, it was a horrible mistake.
And it was horrible.
And so, had any other country on the planet done it, there would have been universal howls of war crime. Because, you know, when you bomb the civilian infrastructure, you are in direct violation of all of the known laws of so-called civilized warfare, which, of course, is oxymoronic in the first place.
Yeah, well, anyway, so I'm not, you know, I have to read an article because I can imagine that you have Hillary.
Yeah. Oh, you're not going to be okay when it's done.
Oh.
You know, she cites everybody but Lady Macbeth, and I found that interesting. Because of all the people she could have cited in support of whatever it is her sort of Merlot-addled thesis might be, Lady Macbeth was the one that came first to mind for me. Because there you have, you know, and I'm not going to get all literature and everything, but Lady Macbeth is the classic picture of the woman, the manipulative power behind the throne, whatever, who ends in horrible, horrible circumstances. And along the way, she says, you know, she gives the great screw your courage to the sticking place speech, which is Elizabethan English for, you know, man up or whatever it is we say these days. But in the end, she winds up, because of her bid for power, she winds up hallucinating her brains out, screaming, out, out, damned spot. And it just, it doesn't work out well. But there seems to be no contemplation of that within this scenario, Sandra. It's like Iraq and Afghanistan don't even exist.
No, but it's incredible. I mean, there's so many issues beyond, you know, the balls of Obama in this equation. And it's really disturbing that they're spending so much time on this when house is being paid for. And what happened to austerity? Austerity day in and day out. Austerity for you and me. And you know what I mean?
And let the good times roll for the defense industry.
Right. And it's just kind of like, how in the world do they expect? Even, you know, a lot of people, if they give it some thought, can put two and two together on this one. So after we finish up with Libya, we're going to have to listen to them talk about what they're going to cut again? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, my patience is severely challenged by that, too.
Yeah, it's horrible. But, I mean, I was kind of encouraged when I heard you interviewing, I don't remember who the guy was, about, you know, I mean, at least he was able to put a positive spin on the Obama health care, right, what was it called? The
Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, because, you know, I really want to believe that the legacy of this man will bear some sort of fruit down the road or something. Because, yeah, so I needed to hear that.
Well, me too, because it's real easy on our side to find a lot to hate about the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it's turning these fascists inside out, that's almost worth it in itself, and it looks like it is. But the sort of wanton attack on the poor is really disturbing me, Bob. I'm sort of like, it's just so blatant and so freaky to the point where they're cutting taxes for these rich people and raising taxes on poor people, just blatantly, and there's no pushback.
Yeah, there's no attempt at masking it anymore, at least under the Bush administration.
Yeah,
You know, the
ownership.
Yeah, it was an ownership society, and it's your money too. And they're out of the closet now, and it ain't the poor's money, and it ain't the middle class's money. It's the 0.1% highest income families in the U.S. It's their damn money.
Yeah, well, no, but it's just kind of these characters, and yeah, I guess maybe you should talk about that main guy every day. He's turning out to be a real, I don't know what to make of that guy, horror show.
Oh, LePage, you know how sick and petty they've gotten, Sandra.
It's just the mural thing.
The mural.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. So at the Maine Department of Labor, there are murals that depict great moments in Maine labor history. Well, not for much longer, because they're going to be removed. And here's the explanation from Labor Department Chief Laura Boyette. I love this language. Our good buddy Eugene Finnerman would be out running naked in the streets, well, if Karen would let him, over this kind of torment. We have received feedback that the administration building is not perceived as equally receptive to both businesses and workers.
As if it's an equal relationship, first stop.
There.
I'm over that.
Yeah,
oh
bang.
God.
Done, yeah. Primarily because of the nature of the mural in the lobby and the names of our conference rooms. Because, see, they've got a conference room named after Chavez, FDR Labor Secretary Francis Perkins and William Looney.
Oh, not Francis Perkins. Listen, that's one of my favorite people.
Yeah.
In history. Anyway, yeah.
Well, and William Looney was the first sponsor of a 10-hour workday law.
Oh, you know what? Yeah,
yeah, we got to get them names off of them rooms.
Oh, no, it's just too much. Yeah, anyway, he's turning into, I mean, all these people, their favorability is just going through the floor. Their unfavorability is going through the roof, I should say.
Yeah, so these murals, they cost $600,000. It was from a federal grant. They depict Rosie the Riveter at Bath Ironworks.
That's right, right.
They depict a 1937 shoe workers' strike and a 1986 paper mill strike. Judy Taylor's the artist who painted them, and she said, "There was never any intention to be pro-labor or anti-labor. It was a pure depiction of the facts." Now, back up to the explanation given by Laura Boyette, because we're not done with that. We're not done with that just, you know, hair on fire moment, Sandra. She says, "Whether or not the perception is valid is not really at issue and therefore not open to debate."
They say it's an it's just a war on the 90%, you know, the so, war on the workers.
Right. So, yeah, so it doesn't matter if, so a right-winger says, you know, this makes me uncomfortable, and I perceive this building as being unfriendly to me because I'm a boss. And so Laura Boyette says, well, it doesn't matter if that person's perception is true. We're just going to do what they say.
Incredible.
And you don't have the right to say anything about it. And then the final indignity. If either of our two constituencies, because business in Maine is now a freaking constituency. Now, excuse me, Sandra, but I thought a constituency meant people who vote.
And breathe.
Well, there is that breathing part. Jesus.
You know, I'm just saying it's human, yeah.
If either of our two constituencies perceives that they are not welcome in our administration building, and this translates to a belief that their needs will not be heard or met by this department, then it presents a barrier to achieving our mission.
Oh, it's just a bunch of BS. And, you know, if I may just shift over to this bill in Arizona. The
abortion thingy?
Well, and that poster with the picture of the black baby, you know, it's an endangered, you know, it's endangered. It's just, this bill there is crazy. They can lock up someone for perceived sex, gender selection, and because of race, right?
Yeah.
If you... Hello?
They're going to find this out how?
And the 72 wait period one and the IRS knocking on your door to see your abortion receipt. I got to dig mine out along with my OJ prize. I don't know where the hell, what planet these people are on.
I don't know. You kind of forgot one. Then there was the woman who was arrested for thinking about abortion.
Oh, listen, I don't mean to laugh. That one, the woman was actually in jail, you know?
Yeah.
She was in, I mean, I would, that one.
In
that
police custody.
Freaked me out. That was freaky. I don't even know what to say about that one, Bob. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. It's just this onslaught, this attack on women. It's just really escalated. I guess, like they say, elections have consequences because, wow. Now, why is it that the Democrats can't do these sort of, I mean, what if we have some sort of, my fantasy, some buckwild liberal agenda, you know, just overtaking the place?
Oh, you mean a real one?
Yes.
Instead of the imaginary one that, I don't know, that Victoria Jackson likes to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, for example, we have the presidency, the Congress, and the Senate. Oh, wait. You know what I mean? That's what happens to us.
Yeah. I mean, this story out of Iowa, it just blew my tiny mind. You've got a woman. She's on the phone. She's pregnant. She's on the phone having a disagreement with her husband. Okay? Now, after the Donnybrook on the phone, she falls down a flight of stairs. So being a responsible pregnant woman, she goes to the hospital to make sure that the fetus is okay.
No, but then she was a bit ambivalent to some nurse, and that's how it all began, right?
Right. So she said that back before she decided to keep the baby, she had thought about abortion.
Right. Right. I mean, that poor woman just sort of... You know, because everyone's been to the doctor or the hospital where you just sort of chit-chatting.
Right,
it's incredible.
But, yeah, and that's the part that floored me. The nurse, the health care provider, dropped the dime.
No, that's the thing. It's just like, oh, wait a minute. And that poor woman, I forgot the rest of the story, but she wouldn't even been released had what? What was the thing that got her out?
Jesus,
they they couldn't establish...
Yeah, well, they couldn't establish which trimester she thought about it in.
Oh, yeah, right, that's right. I knew it was something even stranger.
Now, you know, the American Family Association and James Dobson, who wants to take showers with little boys naked beat children until they cry real tears, you know, those freaks are out there every time there's a hate crime bill, every time some poor kid in Queens gets stomped to death, and they're saying, well, this can't be a hate crime because hate crimes punish you for your thoughts. That's a thought crime, and it's wrong.
Right, but this one...
How the... Is this not a thought crime? Because that's all she did. That's all she confessed to doing, Sandra, was thinking.
Well, did you hear about that woman was talking about how we want to have a memorial, you know, on the mall about the 54 billion lost babies, you know, or whatever Holocaust they're calling it now? I mean, these people are crazy because, wait a minute, 25% of kids are in poverty here. What about, you know, I don't understand. They seem to be, they don't care about the kids out of the womb.
No, and I will never forget going way back to when I was on terrestrial radio in America's fifth smallest radio market. I had a butt-crazy, wild-eyed, right-wing, friend-of-Jesus state legislator on the phone. And he was
talking... Man or a woman?
Oh, it was... Oh, come on. It was a guy.
Yeah, as always.
You know, one of those uterus-challenged people, like me. And so I said, you're putting these bills out there. You're all concerned about the unborn, but I can't help notice, Senator... his name was Russ Weeks. I referred to him as Russ Weeks-minded. I said, I can't help noticing, Senator Weeks, that you're never putting any bills out there to take care of the ones who are already born. Are you only, are you only responsible for the unborn ones? And he said, yep. And I said, does your wife know? And he shut up real fast. But that's where they are. They don't even mind, Sandra, to say, no, I don't give a damn about the ones that are born. All they got to do is get saved.
No, but the one, and that bill in South Dakota where they're making, you know, trying to make women wait 72 hours, and you have to be forced to go to one of those fake clinics that...
Yes, a crisis pregnancy center.
Yeah, I mean, so...
I mean, do they play the Jeopardy theme for 72 hours while you look at pictures of fetuses? I mean, what?
Oh, you know, please, a decision, if you get to the point where you're at a clinic, you've already made a damn decision. I'm so past it. It's like, do they actually know how people make decisions? I mean, it's so much BS. But anyway, listen, I'll let you go. The only thing, other thing I want to say is, have you noticed that the radiation is spreading everywhere?
Iceland.
And it's all through Tokyo's water supply. They're trying to say the infants. Well, the infants. What about everybody else? I don't believe it. I'm totally freaked out by the everything's okay, but they keep finding it.
Well, I'm disturbed by the idea that, at this point, they're content just to sit back and say, well, you know, in 25 years, if you get cancer, how the hell are you going to prove it was the reactor?
Oh, that's how they're banking on. But in the meanwhile, though, how do you evacuate a city of 13 million?
You know, I think...
You don't. I understand.
Yeah, that's where you call Kurt Russell, you know? I mean, it's just snake.
Oh, God. Listen, that's horrible, but... I'm not saying that it's, you know, that bad, but it's scary, though, that Tokyo is because they still don't have control over it, right?
Right. Well, the best they've got is, they say they've got electricity back to all six reactors.
Yeah, but there's still the constant black
smoke. No, the black smoke was again today, yeah.
And again, I'm sorry if I'm laughing. It's just more of a defense mechanism because... it's just all so over the top. But Hong Kong said no more food, thanks. None. Nada.
Yeah, okay? They don't want
They're like, we're done, none. No more exports, nothing.
Yeah, because really, Green Eggs and Ham is a cute children's book. Who wants to eat it?
So, and I really shudder at what kind of economic hit this Japan's gonna.
Well, the latest number I saw said Japanese officials now say that the cost for the reactor disaster may rise as high as $309 billion. And my first thought was, well, we are optimistic today, aren't we?
Oh, not only that, but I also read a report that, the Japanese government is already talking about footing part of the bill for this private corporation.
Right, which by extension, when we say the Japanese government, we mean the Japanese people who didn't screw up.
Right. So anyway, so that's coming down. But the $300 billion, oh, no, that's Pollyanna-ish.
No, we're missing a zero.
You know, I heard a trillion, you know, thrown about there too.
Yeah, yeah, but the Tinkerbell crowd. Oh, it's only $309 billion. You know, the United States can blow through that in 3 days of bombing Libya. No big deal.
No, but we cannot have the third largest economy in the world. I mean,
glowing.
This is a problem. I don't know if you've noticed. Ireland, the pigs are acting up again. That'll look good. Portugal, they had some spread where it was 10% or something really crazy. You know, if you think about us, we can borrow, it's like 1%. In Portugal right now, it's like 8 or 9%.
Oh, no, yeah, right. You know, yeah, because the global banksters, they're getting the Chicago mob calls it the juice.
And
the Eastern mob calls it the VIG, and the global banksters are getting their VIG now.
Right, but there's also been a report that Ireland missed the coupon payment. That's not good.
Oh, hell.
And so, you know, the thing is, Ireland really could default. There is that. But I don't really know. But the missed coupon payment, you know. That's when you're like effing with them bondholders, though.
Right. I mean, that's when they send out the economic knee breakers, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's when they try to go all Ecuador in your ass.
So Portugal is looking like it might be trying to get a bailout at some point soon. So anyway.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
thanks for everything, Sandra. It's been a great conversation.
Oh yeah. Listen. Have a good evening.
All right. You too. Bye now.
Bye bye.
Oh, and I forgot, darn it, I forgot to ask Sandra if she saw the Sacramento funnel cloud. A lot of time was wasted on cable news, I guess, yesterday. Oh, a funnel cloud appeared over Sacramento. Hey. Move to Tennessee. Move to Alabama. Lots, you know, it's like Rain Man funnel clouds. Lots and lots of funnel clouds. Two stories before I go back to the phones, and you know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877-4-HEAD-ON, on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Two things within the scope of what Sandra was talking about that I want to go back to. One, the bus bombing in Israel. This one's pretty hard to stomach. You know, I would assume by now, the dim view that I take of, people prophetizing horror. That's the best way I have to put it. Prophetizing horror. I freaking hate it. And so, as a consequence, when I saw this today after reading about the bus bombing in Israel, I just thought, no, really. This just isn't, but they did. I give you AIPAC. This is sick. You know what happened? A bomb went off in a bus in downtown Jerusalem today. Jerusalem police called it a terrorist attack, the first in Jerusalem in 7 years. President Not Sure made sure that he ran out to condemn the attack in the strongest possible terms. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas did the same, and Prime Minister Salam Fayyad did the same. They condemned it. But get this. before the street had even been cleared of debris. AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, sent out a blast email. God, this is sickening. And if you are familiar with this program, you know that I have I've called BS on people in the environmental community for doing this. I've called BS on American politicians for doing this. And I'm certainly not going to be silent because of some creeping fear of AIPAC. Dear friend of Israel, today, terrorists exploded a package at a Jerusalem bus stop, killing one person and injuring 30 others, 15 seriously. And in this last week alone, Gaza terrorists have bombarded Israeli towns with more than 50 rockets and mortars. This recent upswing in terror attacks reminds us why it is so important that we work to strengthen the U.S.-Israel relationship and help keep our ally Israel safe and secure. AIPAC? They say our ally Israel? That's their boss. And this is why I'm writing today, to ask for your help. Within the next few weeks, the House is expected to consider legislation finalizing fiscal year 2011 government spending. Under the current short-term continuing resolution, Israel has yet to receive full funding for two major programs, $3 billion in security assistance and $205 million for the Iron Dome Mobile Air Defense System. And then the print changes to bright blue. You can help AIPAC work with Congress in the coming weeks to secure passage of this critical funding by joining AIPAC today with a special contribution of $50, $100, $250, or more. As we witness dynamic events unfolding throughout the Middle East, it is vital that we work with our leaders to ensure the U.S. live up to its commitments to the most politically stable and strategically dependable ally we have in the region, Israel. With a great big blue button, help secure U.S. foreign aid for Israel. Donate now. You know, it'd be a damn shame to have human body parts laying all over a street in Jerusalem and not be able to do a little fundraising on it. God Almighty. I don't believe in ghosts. And I don't generally believe in the big, vindictive, bearded, white-haired, juvenile delinquent in the sky. Oh, but there are times when I wish they both were real. Because whoever wrote this filth, this unmitigated goddamn garbage, should be visited by the shades of the dead. The screams of dying children in Gaza and the West Bank should be in this monster's ears 24 hours a day, 60 minutes of every hour, 60 seconds of every minute. Click here to support AIPAC's work with your online donation today. Please support AIPAC and help us work with members of the Congress to secure vital U.S. security aid for Israel. Do you understand how this goddamn dodge works? Schmuck gives money to AIPAC. AIPAC gives money to congressmen. Congressmen, in turn, vote $205 million for Iron Dome Mobile Air Defense System and $3 billion in security assistance. You know what? If Israel couldn't feed itself and needed corn, beans, rice, food from the United States, I would gladly be there helping to load it onto the aircraft. But I'll be damned if there is any, if I can see any shred of evidence that Israel needs another $3 billion of your money and mine. So that, oh, what was his name? I'm sure we will forget soon enough. Yeah. So that Mahmoud Ibrahim Awad of Kerbat Tuba can be stabbed in the head, chest, and arm. Isn't it interesting? We've got this, piece here talking about the recent upswing in terror attacks. Last week alone, Gaza terrorists have bombarded Israeli towns with more than 50 rockets and mortars. But there's no mention of Palestinians stabbed in the head in the street. For that, you get crickets. You know, Ron writes and asks, hey, Bob, our allies? What good is an ally that can't fight with you anywhere in the world? How have they shown themselves willing or capable of putting themselves on the line for us anywhere? Answer, they haven't. Joe Ray writing in, labor rights? Yo, Bob, I fear that if I ever have a job influenced by public and corporate opinion, I would be fired relatively fast. My public response to corporate influence would be, non-taxpaying foreign-based businesses like GE and Walmart can kiss my white working class ass. And out the door you'd go, Joe. Ron also noting, Maine needs a new mural. Hey, Bob, how about, in light of the date, a new mural depicting the women jumping from the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory building? Yeah, we don't remember that anymore. Maura writing in with regard to Elizabeth Taylor. She says, Liz Taylor, a lesson in friendship. Elizabeth Taylor was friends with Michael Jackson for many, many years. When the time came that he had to defend himself in court, Liz did not desert him, but remained his friend. I've had reason to know people, or I've known people. I've known people who had reason to know Virginia Senator John Warner when he was married to Elizabeth Taylor. And they have said to me on a number of occasions that she was without doubt the most gracious human being that they had ever met in their lives. One last note, and then assuming you're still on the line, I'll go back to the phones. I want to go back to the Arizona story that Sandra was talking about. Because it's so, because there's something important here that needs to be noted. Now, what we were discussing was the fact that the Arizona House of Representatives passed this nasty-ass bill that said that abortions would be prohibited if they were sought because of the race or sex of the fetus or the race of the parent. This is all under the guise of race or sex-based discrimination against the unborn. Well, that bill passed the Arizona House last month by a vote of 41-18. And it allowed lawsuits and civil fines against, quote, abortion providers who knowingly provide such abortions. See, it's another one of those little BS laws that they wingnut legislatures like to pass to keep their mouth breathing, knuckle walking, house helmet wearing, elbow padded, knee padded, oatmeal dribbling, right wing faithful in line. Knowingly provide such abortions. Good luck proven knowingly. So in the typical legislative process, this bill moves over to the Arizona Senate, where the president is Russell Pierce. You might recall we talked about Russell Pierce last night because Russell Pierce thinks that you are not, none of us are citizens of the United States of America. Right? Yeah. We're only citizens of our several states. And you remember that, that's, well, to say the least, not supported by the Constitution of the United States, but frankly, Russell Pierce doesn't give a pinker's damn. Okay, so we've got that going on. Well, now this bill has moved over to the Arizona Senate, where Russell Pierce is the president of said Senate. And this past Monday, by a 21-5 vote, which is that vote total is freighted with meaning all by itself. By a 21-5 vote, the Arizona Senate passed the bill that came from the House, but the Senate had to tinker with it a little bit because it wasn't serious enough. The Arizona Senate, so now this has to go back to the Arizona House, the Arizona Senate tacked on provisions that would provide not only civil penalties, but criminal penalties as well. Violators, according to the report, violators of the criminal provision of the bill would face a presumptive prison term of 3.5 years. Not county jail, prison. The report on this comes from the East Valley Tribune. And it says, HB 2443 does more than make criminals out of doctors who terminate a pregnancy knowing the woman's reason is to select the race or gender of the child. It also imposes criminal penalties on anyone who solicits or accepts funds to finance abortions based on race or sex. Violators would face a presumptive prison term of 3.5 years. That latter provision, listen carefully, not that you don't. That latter provision is aimed at Planned Parenthood. Proponents of the measure, citing undercover videos, say organization representatives of Planned Parenthood have taken money from individuals interested in limiting births to African American women. Now, what does this mean? Well, one, it's awful. Because, once again, the Republican Party, who claims to want to get government off our backs, digging in on a woman's back a little bit with their claws, just a little bit more deeply in her fragile flesh. By the way, Governor Jan Brewer, no, it doesn't have to go to a conference committee. It doesn't have to go back to the House. No, the bill is going straight to Governor Jan Brewer, who will get out her magic marker or her crayon or whatever it is that they let her try to write with, and she will scrawl her name upon it, making it the law of the state of Arizona. But it's that, because I'm the way I am, I saw that one little phrase, citing undercover videos. You know what they're talking about, right? They're talking about the latest, one of the latest pieces of unmitigated crap to come from, come through the lens, and more importantly, through the editing suite of James O'Keefe. The father of the Acorn smear, the father of the Shirley Sherrod smear, the creator of the Planned Parenthood smear. This ain't journalism, folks. Let's be real squared up about that. This is not journalism. What this means is that as soon as this is law, James O'Keefe will be all over Arizona, and he will have a dummied-up woman claiming to be pregnant going to doctor after doctor after doctor, and she will be a white woman, and she'll say, "Doctor, I'm pregnant." But I've realized the father's a Negro.
and my family will disown me if I give birth to one of them. Oh, doctor, I got to have me a abortion.
And the camera will be rolling the whole time. I know no one in Arizona's Planned Parenthood organization is listening to me. God, I would that they were. Because I would... Listen, are you in Arizona? I know we got listeners in Arizona. We got several of them. Do me a favor. Pick up the phone tomorrow. Be proactive on this. And try, even if it turns out to feel rather like Cassandra, try to warn your Planned Parenthood community in Arizona that this is coming at them. I would assume that Planned Parenthood is already at least sensitive to this issue, having been once bitten, twice shy by James O'Keefe. But an ounce of prevention is, in fact, worth a pound of cure, and I would encourage you to contact those organizations. In addition, after you're done with that, try to find out where the abortion clinics. See how it creeps? It's like poison that gets poured into your ear. Try to locate the women's health centers that provide reproductive health care services. And pass this warning on to them. That there will be someone coming through their door who is white and pregnant with a black child, or black and pregnant with a white child. Or wanted a boy, pregnant with a girl, wanted a girl, pregnant with a boy, one of those scenarios. And they will tell you openly that that is what they're seeking. Or they'll hint at it, or they'll play around the margins of it. And that whoever does that should be frisked. Not thrown out on the street, but frisked. Looking for hidden recording devices. You in Arizona might also, because this is how you fight back against fascism. This is how you engage the struggle against fascism. You might also apprise yourself of what Arizona's recording laws are, because they're not the same from state to state. Some states require the consent of both parties to the recording. Some states require the consent of only one. Find out what Arizona's is, and be proactive, and do something, and try to make this impossible for James O'Keefe to accomplish, because as sure as God made little green apples, yeah, James O'Keefe is coming. Jim writing in. Excuse me. Right to life? How about the rights of the living, replete with the hopes of the parents who wish to ensure their progeny? Not in Repiglican world. You get what God wants you to have, because life is a miracle. The miracle of birth. That's why they called it that. Hallelujah. Praise Jesus. I felt like that had to be said. That little warning. Because while I do not hold myself out as any sort of prophet, I can make certain, I am able to make certain informed predictions based upon past performance. As Shakespeare said, what's past is prologue. And James O'Keefe's prologue is dirty and sleazy and filthy, hateful, despicable, pernicious, mendacious. Yeah.
Lord, it would be fun to be with James O'Keefe in a room when the lights go out. There are certain Warner Brothers cartoons that address the issue. From Robert in Japan, Bob, I'm about to get to work on some transcripts, but I had to comment. On that trip to Palawan in the Philippines, I read in the city newspaper that the church had called President Poe's drive for family planning. This means, Bob, just counseling on the number of children one should have and on contraceptives, not abortion, which is another 100 years away, along with the concept of allowing divorce, as ferocious terrorism. That's the church speaking there. Family planning in the Philippines, counseling about the number of children one should have, and telling people that contraceptives exist. The church, Holy Mother Church, describes that as ferocious terrorism. Robert notes, the result of the lack of family planning, our streets literally clogged and choked with people. The church cares only for more money from its rubes. And with that, let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, Bob. This is Marty. How you doing?
Hey, Marty. What's going on, man?
Well, I'm not really blaming you for West Virginia screwing up my bracket. My bracket was in the other one. But anyway, I wanted to comment about O'Keefe. I didn't get a chance to hear the entire program, but did you mention that this O'Keefe person is actually looking for money?
Well, no, I didn't mention that, but I guess that sort of goes with the turf, doesn't it?
Apparently he is claiming, and I forget where it is, I'll have to find it and send it to you, that he has incurred $50,000 worth of credit card debt and wants donations to help him pay it.
Oh, God. You know what, Marty? You know what sickens me?
He'll get it.
He'll get it in spades, pressed down and shaken together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And it's like every time somebody folds when this guy does an edited hit piece, all it does is embolden him and the other people. I mean, I half wish that reporter had gotten on the boat and then sued the guy for taping her. Because maybe that would have stopped him. I mean, I certainly don't think Shirley Sherrod suing him is going to help, because they'll come up with a bunch of PS stuff.
No, no, no. She'll win and he'll go bankrupt. It's the same thing that you remember Randall Terry, right?
Yes.
You remember Operation Rescue?
Oh yeah.
Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center sued the life out of him and won, so that he had to leave Operation Rescue. But before he did that, he went bankrupt. And the last I saw of Randall Terry, he was in front of the White House, back where people like Mike Malloy and Colonel Ann Wright and Daniel Ellsberg got arrested last Saturday. He was unmolested in front of the White House as they tormented and terrorized a Muslim man. And in the process, Randall Terry, Marty, was wearing a fur freaking coat.
What? I mean, just what? A baby seal isn't a baby human. My sarcasm's evident, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Oh, thank you. Sometimes you worry. Like this. Like, it's easier to be sarcastic in an email subject line than it is to be sarcastic on the phone sometimes.
Well, did you see the Sacramento Funnel Cloud?
No.
Did you see the Sacramento Funnel Cloud?
No, I didn't.
No, I missed it too. Well,
When did it happen?
I guess day before yesterday or something. Maybe yesterday.
No, not really.
Yeah, well, your poor, sad, benighted life, Marty.
Yeah, being at work and all that. Well, the funny thing is, over the weekend we had such wind and rain, I was looking for where the animals were lining up two by two just to see if the story really is true. oh, jeez, what a I don't get a chance to call in that often, so it's like I'm here in the office before I'm going home, so it's like, oh, let me give Bob a call and see how everything's doing.
Yeah, you know, it's moving along, but like I said with Jim earlier, sometimes I finish this show and I just feel like I need a shower.
But what about this? But I hit the tail end when you were talking to Sandra. Woman thinking about abortion gets arrested?
Yes, sir.
When, and I sent you an email saying, when the heck was this?
Well, it was in Iowa.
Figures.
Because Iowa has another one of those hate-filled anti-woman bills.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa also has another one of those nice new laws that encourages people to blow away doctors who perform abortions.
But we're such a civilized country. But it's the Muslims over.
Yeah, they're the problems, right?
They're the animals. Yes. Jeez, I can't. You know, and then you get the thing, and you were mentioning Pearson, Arizona, and then there's what's his name, Bobby something in Georgia.
Oh yeah, that freak.
Talking about we must now. It's like if a woman has a miscarriage, she must prove it happened. It must prove it happened naturally.
I mean, at what point? And I know we're not allowed to say this because it just drives the right wing crazy. I think it's because they resemble the remark so much. At what point do we get to start pointing out that this is beginning to resemble the breeding for the Reich programs, Marty? Because you know the Third Reich did have those. You know, they had no toleration. They had no tolerance for gay men, but they were a little more so of lesbians, as long as they were willing to have babies for the Reich.
Right, and that's the funny thing. You remember all the arguments? In fact, somebody made one. Didn't someone make one just not too long ago about how with the availability of abortion, we're too much like the Nazis, and I'm going, what are you kidding me? The Nazis, I mean, no. I'm trying to say, no. The Nazis were anti-abortion. If you were of the Aryan
oh, yeah.
ideal, then they were anti-abortion, and in fact, they wanted women to stay home and make babies for the Reich. And I remember a few years ago, some idiot who came out of Sacramento, musically named John Gibson, used to be a weather person for Channel.
No, you talking about War on Christmas, John Gibson?
Oh no, well maybe he's War on Christmas as well, but he.
I mean, didn't he wind up at Fox?
They're all going to wind up at Fox.
God, where journalism goes to die.
I'm going to Canada where Fox cannot. but he was saying, I mean, talking about low birth rates and whatever, and saying, go out there, get busy, make more babies. It's like, and I remember hearing him say that, I'm going, and pay for them how? You know, and as you and Sandra were saying, you get this, you know, they only care so long as the baby is in utero. And
yeah.
the second it's out in the world, they all disappear. And there is a Planned Parenthood, or at least there was one, because I think I've told you I work on the campus of the University of California, Davis, in Davis, about 12 miles away from Sacramento, and then commute home to Sacramento. There's a Planned Parenthood office nearby, and every so often I see a demonstration out there, an anti-abortion demonstration. And I just had to do it this one time. And I went up to them and I said, well, what options do you grant for the pregnant woman who cannot afford her baby, cannot afford to have a kid? And he said, oh, there's adoption. I said, okay, fine. And then I asked, how many kids are there available for adoption right now? Never mind the pregnant women who are going to put their babies up for adoption after the baby's been born, but right this very second. How many kids are there in orphanages? How many kids are in foster homes? These are older kids. They're special needs kids. How many of them are going to be in that situation and have to grow up not being in a family? Well, I don't know.
And you know what? All those right-wingers, because I've been in situations where I've sort of seen this system in action, Marty.
Mm-hmm.
Potential adoptive parents don't want to adopt a six-year-old. They darn sure don't want to adopt a 10 or a 12-year-old. They want nice little shiny brand new babies that they can get all squishy about instead of doing the hard work of trying to heal and ameliorate the horrors that pre-existing children, you know, children with the misfortune of suffering the pre-existing condition of being alive, suffer from. I have yet to see the American Family Association or Focus on the Family or the Family Research Council or any of those other fine, upstanding, good, God-fearing organizations set up massively multi-million-dollar funded operations to put living, growing children ahead of brand new infants in terms of adoption because it doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't exist. They don't want that. I mean, it's not about the child. It's about the control.
Right, and the good, upstanding, God-fearing Christians also. Well, you know, they'll go to China and maybe they'll adopt a Chinese baby, or they'll go to Romania or Russia.
Yeah.
But you know what? With the exception of maybe Madonna and Angelina Jolie, they ain't adopting no black babies.
No, they are not. It's just not. It's not.
You know, because there are. You know, Africa is covered up in pathetic little human beings, desperately in need of love and caring, who happen to have been born through no fault of their own, carrying the HIV virus, and desperately need love and care.
Not so much. To just sort of finish what I was saying, it's like, you know, I tried to tell them. It's like, okay, fine, go. It's like, fine, go check, go empty out all the orphanages, all the foster homes. When every kid on the planet has a loving, happy home to take care of them and love them and provide for them, come back and talk to me about banning abortion. I'll be prepared to listen. And as you have said, it ain't there. They ain't interested. It's just not profitable for them to do that.
Oh, and by the way, Jim writing in, and he is a positive font of information on this sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
He says Himmler encouraged out-of-wedlock babies, especially if they were conceived in cemeteries on the graves of warriors. Jim asks, can you imagine? And, you know, really scared? No.
Yeah, so Himmler believed in reincarnation.
Oh, yeah, they believe in it.
Only so many souls in the world still makes me wonder. I still wonder, what was the deal the Pontiff made with the Nazis that the Vatican was not allowed to be overrun during World War II?
Well, that just cost a few dead Jews.
Yeah. Just to overlook it?
Yeah, just a few trainloads.
Yeah, I guess so. It's not like they were paying into the Vatican Bank.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. It's like, well, their money's not coming to us. Go ahead, off, and we don't care.
Yeah, the Vatican Federal Credit Union.
Exactly.
Oof.
So anyway, so let me ask you this.
Yes.
Sorry, folks. It's time for a little sports break. So how is your NC2A tournament going?
Oh my God! It looks like what was left of the Hindenburg.
Oh, that bad.
Oh yeah. It's well, you know, I homered on West Virginia. I'm proud to say that because I despise Pitt. I have to. They would take my diplomas away if I didn't.
Oh.
And I'm proud to say that I did have Pitt bowing out in the second round. I just didn't have the Mounties going. But no, all four of my final four are just gone.
No, I still have three of my four final four. And if I get just one of them into the championship game, I'll be a happy camper. That's San Diego State. Because that would have been San Diego State would have beaten Duke. Anybody but Duke.
Oh, I know. There was that little backstory around the Michigan-Duke game about the things that Michigan players had said about Duke.
Oh, yes. And Grant Hill's taking exception to it.
Yeah, poor Grant.
Yeah, just the son of Calvin Hill and had that entire privileged background and the quote-unquote Fab Five, not that I'm a big fan of Chris Webber at all. But, I was like, okay, well, like, okay, yeah, they're more street. Duke is more green jackety, I guess we can say.
Yeah, Duke is the guy who Duke is the guy that played the foil to Will Smith on the TV show.
TV show?
The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Never saw it.
Good for you.
Not really a Will Smith fan, though I have to admit, for starting out as a rapper, he's made himself into a damn fine actor.
Yeah.
Gotta give him that much. The precious little else. But, anyway.
Yeah, still waiting for him to pair him as the male romantic lead with a white chick. That hasn't happened yet, really, has it?
I don't think it will. I think Jay to kick his butt.
Yeah.
you'll have to ask Sandra about that.
Oh, we're so shallow. Marty, we are so shallow.
Yes, we are. Anyway, I'm going to let you go and get on to somebody else, and I'm going to go drive home. And
well, have a safe drive home, and hope you don't see any funnel clouds.
All right, thanks.
All right, take care, Marty.
All right, take care.
Bye now. Marty, the comments along the way and with one-liners throughout the most programs. It's nice when he gets a chance to call in. I want to back up a minute because Marty did want details, and if Marty wanted details, that means you need details too. I don't know if you've heard all the details of the Iowa woman falls downstairs, gets traumatized, arrested, yada, yada, yada. But these are they. The story from change.org is dated February 12th, 2010. No, wait a minute. Yeah. And so, you know, it's a little bit older, but it's also, ripped from today's headlines, as they say on the TV box. Woman's pregnant, falls downstairs, you know, she faints. It happens. Goes to hospital. The paramedics come to the house and say, yeah, everything's fine, the baby's fine, blah, 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 blah. She is estranged from her husband. So she's by herself. She's terrified, beside herself. And at the hospital, because there used to be this thing called the doctor-patient privilege, she tells the nurse who's treating her, she says, you know, I was not, you know, now that I'm single and unemployed, I wasn't always sure I wanted to go ahead and have the baby. She says she looked at both adoption and abortion before she decided to keep and raise the child. So the nurse sticks her head out in the hall and says, oh, doctor, could you come here for a moment? The doctor comes in the room and starts asking her more questions about her thoughts on ending the pregnancy. The next thing that happened to her was that she was arrested for attempted feticide. The nurse and the doctor were somehow convinced, and we are not explained exactly what passed for a thought process with those two numbskulls. They had convinced themselves that Christine Taylor had thrown herself down the stairs on purpose. Attempted feticide is defined in Iowa as intentionally trying to terminate a human pregnancy with the knowledge and voluntary consent of the pregnant person after the end of the second trimester of the pregnancy. Here's the gross and creepy part. Those laws, that ain't just Iowa, that ain't South Dakota, that ain't just Arizona. Laws like that are on the books in 37 states of the Union. One pregnant woman takes a laxative, miscarries, that could be attempted feticide. A woman has a glass of wine at dinner, not every night, but has a glass of wine at dinner, happens to have a miscarriage, that could be attempted feticide in 37 states of the Union. And like Sandra said, it's not like somebody looked up and went, oh, this is crazy, turn her loose. No, hell no. She was booked, she was printed, and she was photographed and charged. It was only when the district attorney got hold of the case, and only after 3 weeks of investigation, that the DA decided not to prosecute Christine Taylor. And the decision was not made not to prosecute her because it would be dumb and stupid and hateful and horrifying, but because they couldn't make sure, they could not prove that she was early in her third trimester instead of in the late part of her second trimester. That's it. You know, and that's not the only story. There's another one. We just don't have time. We don't have time to do the other one. Also a 2010 story. Nothing has changed. The laws aren't gone. They're still there. It's okay to use the word empire. It's okay to use the word fascism when we talk about life in America now. It's okay. Because that is what it is. So we'll wrap up and quit now. Be back tomorrow night, Thursday night. And I want to thank the one person during this program who took us from who took us down by one more peg in our attempt to reach our fundraising goal. It is badly needed if you can help. And again, thank you to the three from overnight who took us who took up the spaces of 20 members of the Thrifty 250. Thank you very, very kindly. If this kind of radio matters to you, then I encourage you to use the button at headonradionetwork.com. It says contribute right up at the top of the page. And whether you contribute via PayPal or via snail mail makes no difference to me. What makes a difference is you making sure that this is able to continue, because apparently it does matter to you. And for that, we are grateful. Time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Rick Smith is next. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and coalriverwind.org, and always, always...